Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today. Thank you for tuning in. And I do not relish to talk about the weather. Rain today with a winter storm warning again in effect for tonight and tomorrow. Temperatures are going to go down near freezing with rain and snow on Saturday. Sunday may see sun, but on Monday again there's rain and snow predicted, and we are not likely to see sun again until Wednesday, when temperatures should rise into the 50s. We have another host today, Kobe Gaines, who's a new member of the Local Talk team. Kobe, would you please describe yourself a little bit? And welcome to the Local Talk.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I'm a new intern here at KHOI. I currently go to Iowa State, where I'm a student at Greenlee. I'm a sophomore. I started out going here with the audio lab that came here with the Iowa State Daily.
And explain a little bit what that is.
The audio lab is the Iowa State Daily wanted to try something new. They had a few podcasts that were going around, but, you know, not enough exposure. And, Mark Witherspoon, one of the faces that really got us here, and Lawrence Cunningham, they wanted to do a, audio lab with KHOI to get more exposure of how to run podcasts and how to really get that, mainstream look at it. So one thing led to another. So glad to be here and ready to get started.
Okay, great. Well, let's get started. Dennis Hart is here with a roundup of last week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related local papers. So take it away, Dennis.
As always, we begin with a look at what made news in Tuesday's Ames Tribune. And one of the big stories was that Story County received one of its lower set of health rankings in recent years in the just-released County Health Rankings and Roadmap Program, which is produced through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. That program evaluates health measures including high school graduation rate, obesity, smoking, unemployment, and the quality of air and water in nearly every county in America. Story County ranked 17th overall among Iowa's 99 counties for health outcomes and 8th overall for health factors. The latest report shows that 13% of Story County residents are considered to be in poor or fair health. 15% of Story County adults are smokers. 27% of adults are considered obese. And 20% of adults reported no leisure time physical activities. None at all. 24% of residents reported binge or heavy drinking. 94% of the county's ninth graders graduate in 4 years, and 85% of adults between the ages of 25 and 44 have some post-secondary education. 9% of Story County children under the age of 18 live in poverty, and 24% of children also live in single-family households. Tuesday's Tribune also reported about upcoming changes to the SciRide bus system in Ames. Starting this summer, buses will no longer wait for patrons who are running to a SciRide stop in an attempt to catch a bus that's pulling away. Currently, drivers will wait if they see a person running to catch a bus near the stop. By no longer waiting, drivers will not delay the people who are already on the bus. Instead, SciRide will increase the frequency of buses to limit the impact if you miss one. The new summer routes will start May 5th, and the routes and times for the school year begin August 13th. One of the bigger changes will come on those routes from West Ames to Iowa State. Instead of circulating around campus, buses will drop riders near Friley Hall, where passengers can then transfer to a different bus or walk to their destination. SciRide will also start providing an on-demand service for East Ames. And one more change. The cash fare to ride the bus will drop from $1.25 to $1. Also Tuesday in the Trib, word that a Zearing man is recovering after being severely injured last Friday on a farm when his foot got entangled in the conveyor belt that was removing grain from a bin. The injured man was identified as 19-year-old Ross Barker. The Trib also reported that the manager of a come-and-go convenience store in Nevada was arrested for allegedly stealing nearly $5,000 from the store since late last year. 44-year-old Brian Thomas Bunn of Nevada was charged with second-degree theft. His preliminary hearing is set for next Tuesday. Also on the court beat, the trial for the Ames man, who was accused of dragging a woman from her car and sexually assaulting her in Franklin Park last year, has been delayed until September. 23-year-old Devontis David Voits is charged with first-degree assault, kidnapping, and willful injury. His trial was set to begin this week. Authorities arrested him in connection with the incident in which a woman in her mid-20s was forcibly removed from her vehicle last year. There was more in Tuesday's Tribune, including a reminder that the second half of the fiscal year 2017-2018 Story County property taxes are due on or before Saturday, March 31st. A penalty of 1.5% starts April 1st. By law, all property owners are mailed a tax statement, even if they pay taxes through an escrow account. Those who do so can consider the tax statement merely an information mailing. There was also word that Ryman Gardens will host its annual spring egg hunt on Saturday, March 31st. Activities will include an egg hunt for children who are in the sixth grade or younger. The egg hunt will take place from 9 to 11 a.m. on the 31st. There were other tasty stories in Tuesday's Tribune, including word that two Ames restaurants have been listed on the Iowa Cattlemen's Association annual Best Burgers in Iowa Top 10 list. One of them is Café Baudelaire. The other is the Iowa Stater. And the Tribune provided a sneak peek at former Iowa State quarterback Seneca Wallace's new Wingstop restaurant, which was set to open this week on South Duff Avenue in Ames. Memorabilia from Wallace's playing days are scattered around the restaurant, including framed jerseys from his days at Iowa State, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Green Bay Packers. Various newspaper spreads from the Ames Tribune and other outlets are mounted on the walls. And one more note from Tuesday's Tribune, a feature story about retired Ames police officer Raleigh Link, who is now the author of a book series involving the fictional G&B Detective Agency. You can read all about that series in Tuesday's Trib. In Wednesday's Tribune, word that one man died and another was hospitalized following a two-car crash on U.S. Highway 69 north of Gilbert on Tuesday. The dead man was identified as 25-year-old Zechariah Amir Conrad. Authorities said he was driving northbound in a Chevy Impala when it crossed the center line near 150th Street, 2 miles north of the Gilbert turnoff. Conrad's vehicle struck head-on, a southbound Ford Focus driven by a Story City man. Both vehicles ended up in the ditch west of the highway. Conrad was pronounced dead on the scene. The Story City man was taken to a hospital and later released. Also Wednesday, the Tribune reported that an Iowa State University student was arrested weeks after court documents allege he made threats to a fellow student over Facebook. 21-year-old Billy Pisonout Noy of Ames was arrested Monday and charged with first-degree harassment. Officers were notified by a concerned individual that Noy had made troubling statements over Facebook Messenger about an AK-47 rifle. Those messages allegedly said that Noy wanted to punish people for what they did but did not give a specific name. Noy told officers he had issues with two people in the Iowa State Engineering Club and that they were not treating him well. Police found no weapons. After authorities notified one of the people Noy had mentioned, she said she feared for her safety and wanted charges filed against Noy. Wednesday's Tribune also reported on Tuesday night's Ames City Council meeting, where the council took steps toward limiting the concentration of single-family rental homes in neighborhoods near the Iowa State University campus. On a 4-2 vote, the council instructed city staff to draft an ordinance that would cap the concentration of single-family rental properties in each of the city's university-adjacent neighborhoods at 25%. If the ordinance is approved at later meetings, that 25% restriction would apply within the borders of the Old Edwards, the Oakwood Forest, the West Side, the College Creek Old Ames Middle School, the South Campus area, the Colonial Village, and the Oak Riverside neighborhoods. Because some of those neighborhoods already have rental concentrations topping 25%, the council also directed staff to include a grandfather statute to allow current rental properties to continue operating as they are. The 25% concentration cap would prohibit additional rental properties from joining the neighborhood while it's at or above the cap. Those neighborhoods make up what's now considered the moratorium area, those near-campus areas in which the council had previously halted the issuance of new rental permits while it tinkered with the city's rental code. That moratorium expires May 1st. Council members Amber Corrieri and Chris Nelson voted against the 25% ordinance. Corrieri said the council needed to have more information before making a decision, and Nelson said he was concerned that neighborhoods near the ones that would fall under the concentration limits could see an influx of new rentals if landlords cannot build elsewhere. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, word that legislation that passed the Iowa House of Representatives earlier this month could mean big changes for the Story County Board of Supervisors. That bill would require Story County and the 9 other Iowa counties that have 60,000 or more residents to have its supervisors live in specific districts, and to have only each district's residents vote in their own races. Right now, Story County supervisors are all elected at large, without any residency requirements or districts. The new plan would take effect starting in 4 years, in the year 2022. County Supervisor Chair Rick Sanders said he dislikes the idea of the state deciding to make the proposed change without Story County residents having a say. Because the required districting would be based on having 3 separate districts with equal population numbers in each, the likelihood is that in Story County, 2 of the districts would end up largely representing Ames, with the one outside of the county's biggest city making up the difference. The bill that could require all these changes now sits in the Iowa Senate. At Tuesday's supervisors' meeting, the supervisors unanimously approved the zoning requests and development plan for a new grain facility outside Collins. Landis Cooperative plans to spend nearly $14 million to develop a 13-acre site. The supervisors also approved a draft of the county's capital improvements plan, which outlines the infrastructure projects Story County plans to undertake in the coming years. Among those projects, a countywide communication system, improvements to the animal shelter, and planning work on county justice center improvements. The supervisors also voted to pay $22,000 to Prairie Rivers of Iowa to install informational signs near the county's watersheds and creeks. One more note involving the Board of Supervisors, Ames Area Attorney Josh Opperman declared his candidacy for a board seat on Tuesday. Upperman is a Democrat, and he joins fellow Democrat Linda Merkin as candidates for the two seats currently held by Republicans Rick Sanders and Martin Chitty, both of whom are running for re-election. And also in Wednesday's Trib, the Ames School District announced that Christy Mixdorf has been named principal at Edwards Elementary. She is now the director of teaching and learning for the North Polk School District. She will assume her new position July 1st, replacing retiring principal Dave Peterson. In Thursday's Ames Tribune, more information about the City Council's discussion earlier this week about the city's rental occupancy ordinance. The Council has voted to instruct staff to draft a change to the new ordinance that would remove the number of parking spots as a factor in determining occupancy in a single-family or duplex rental property. The current ordinance mandates that 1, 2, or 3-bedroom homes must have at least 2 off-street parking spots for the home to hold the maximum number of renters. Houses with 4 or 5 bedrooms would need 1 parking spot per bedroom. If the council gives the proposed change final approval in a few weeks, it would remove a major component from the rental code that it enacted less than 3 months ago. Also in Thursday's Tribune, the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission on Wednesday unanimously recommended that the city council establish a temporary moratorium in the proposed downtown Gateway focus area along Lincoln Way. That moratorium would apply to properties along and near Lincoln Way between Duff and Grand Avenues. It would prevent new development while the council deliberates exactly what it wants that area to eventually look like. Thursday's Tribune also reported that an Ames man who allegedly assaulted a woman and threatened to kill her in January has pleaded guilty to willful injury and domestic strangulation. 50-year-old Max Michael Gerber will be sentenced April 16th. And there was more. Thursday's Trib had word that Ames High School students spent much of this past week holding a bipartisan voter registration drive to get eligible students to cast ballots in the April 3rd bond referendum election to decide whether to build a new high school and in the upcoming June state primary elections. Meanwhile, at Iowa State University tomorrow morning, a 5K run will be held with proceeds going toward creating a new scholarship award for students impacted by changes to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. More than 200 people had registered to take part in the event, which begins at 8 a.m. tomorrow. And Thursday's Tribune had the first story of a 4-part series analyzing Iowa State fraternity and sorority life behavior. The story points out that 35 out of 38 disciplinary sanctions handed down to ISU student organizations in the past 4 years have been given to Greek chapters at the university. It's a complex issue, and the Tribune story is long and complex. You can read it on the front pages of Thursday's Trib. In this week's Nevada Journal, 2 Democratic Party candidates stopped in Nevada on Wednesday. One was J.D. Scholten, who is running for his party's nomination in Iowa's 4th Congressional District. The other was Tracy Fries, who is running to replace former Iowa Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix in Senate District 25 in a special election next month. Dix resigned earlier this month after a video emerged of him kissing a lobbyist in a Des Moines bar. Scholten hopes to get the Democratic nomination in the 4th District so that he can run against incumbent Republican Steve King in November. He said, in his words, "Our movement is about gaining back this district." Fries said she plans to emphasize personal interactions with voters as her main strategy. Also in the Journal, word that the Colonesco School Board plans to lower the district's property tax levy by about $2.70. District officials said Colonesco could have one of the lowest public school tax levies in the state. And there's a feature story about the home of Mary Lou and Gary Flack on F Avenue in Nevada. Their home is featured in the most recent edition of Country Sampler Home Tours magazine. In this week's Boone News Republican, highlights from Monday's Boone City Council meeting, in which the council unanimously agreed to draft an ordinance that bans puppy mills and the retail sale of cats and dogs within the city. Also at the meeting, Mayor John Slight swore in Andrew Hull as the newest member of the city fire department. The council also approved setting a public hearing on April 2nd at 6 p.m. to consider proposed fiscal year 2018 budget amendments. And the council approved spending $105,000 to purchase land at 332 West 2nd Street in Boone. That property once held the Green Meadows Mobile Home Park, which has since been cleared. The nearly 3 acres of land could support up to 8 new single-family homes. At the Boone County Board of Supervisors meeting, the supervisors approved signing the Iowa Department of Transportation's secondary roads budget for fiscal year 2019. That budget helps determine the local property tax support needed to ensure that state gas tax money continues to come into the county. On another issue, the supervisors approved giving the Boone Area Humane Society $12,000 to help with any animal calls that may occur in the county areas outside the city. Also in the News Republican, word that Republican State Representative Chip Baltimore of Boone confirmed that he will not seek another term in the State House of Representatives. The 47-year-old Baltimore has served 4 terms in office. He said his decision not to run had nothing to do with his guilty plea to drunken driving and weapons charges following his arrest in Ames in January. And one more note from the News Republican. A Boone teenager who was awaiting sentencing for robbing and assaulting a 55-year-old man last July has now been charged in connection with a separate incident from last year. 19-year-old Ian Lester now faces charges of third-degree burglary for allegedly breaking into a Nevada home and stealing firearms and other items. In this week's Story City Herald, word that Governor Kim Reynolds had chosen April 10th for the Senate District 25 special election to replace former Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix of Shell Rock. That announcement sets up a likely matchup between Democrat Tracy Freese and Republican Annette Sweeney. Dix resigned after a video posted on a website showed him kissing a lobbyist at a Des Moines bar. Senate District 25 covers eastern Story County along with sections in the north and south of the county. Also in the Herald, author Linda McCann of Shell Rock will discuss her newest book at the Roland Public Library tomorrow, Saturday. McCann's book, Civil Conservation Corps in Northeast Iowa, looks at the federal program designed to assist young men in supporting their families, as well as to renew natural resources. Her talk will start at 11 tomorrow morning. And that is your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm KHOI Civic Reporter Dennis Hart, wishing you, as always, a happy, safe, and healthy weekend.
You have just joined us. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for that roundup of local news. I don't know how he does it. More news can be found at AmesTribune.com. I'm Kobe Gaines, a new host here at KHOI to bring you some people stories and events in Central Iowa. Habitat for Humanity is a nonprofit organization made up of individuals and groups from faith communities, businesses, and service groups that help build and remodel homes for people who need them. It aims to help in poverty housing and describes decent housing a matter of conscience and action. Habitat for Humanity of Central Iowa, our local chapter of this international effort, has been working to improve housing in our area since the 1980s.
Most of us have heard about Habitat for Humanity, especially after President Jimmy Carter made it a household word by becoming one of its star volunteers. But how much do you really know about what they do? Recently, our local chapter has had a building upgrade themselves, moving into a space on North Grand, otherwise known as Highway 69, and they're having a grand opening. We took this opportunity to have Tom Lockhart come to fill us in. Tom does public relations for Habitat for Humanity. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Tell us about the grand opening. What's happening?
Oh, there's a lot happening. Our grand opening is officially May 19th. That's a Saturday from 9 until 2. And we'll have some lunch, some free food, probably from 11 to 1 or until it runs out. But it'll be a lot of fun. We've got this brand new building. It's the old Heartland Baptist Church. And before that was DeJoy and Johnson.
DeJoy and Johnson Auction Center.
It's just north of the new Walmart, right where Bloomington T intersections. There's a stoplight there.
So it's lots of memories in that building.
Oh, yeah. I used to go in there. It looks a lot more like DeJoy and Johnson now than like Heartland because we've done a lot of renovation inside. But it's going to be fabulous because we can take our offices, our store, and our annex and get them all under one roof, which, I mean, just makes more sense than being in three or four locations.
You used to be spread out around.
Yeah, our store had basically no parking, or it still has no parking in front of it down there on East Lincoln Way. It was difficult to find. You drive right by it, and we couldn't get even half of the merchandise we have in there for people to shop. So, and that's really what drives the majority of our funding to build houses and refurbish houses is what we sell through the resale store. So to us, it's very important to be able to expand that presentation.
There's a lot of renovating going on and a lot of moving in.
Yes, exactly. In theory, our offices are in there. I'm up there this week, but we're still painting, putting in doors. I've got dust every day. That's why I'm dressed so casually today. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but most of the work, again, is done by volunteers, which is what kind of drives our mission. So,
It's a volunteer-driven organization,
yes,
essentially.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Habitat for Humanity. One of the things you mentioned was the store.
Yes. Well, we sell a lot of furniture, appliances, I mean, sinks, tools, power tools, windows, flooring, pretty much anything to do with homes and construction we carry there. Most everything we have is donated, and it is gently used but still in very good condition. We won't put it out on the floor if it's not quality product. We did just have a big donation of brand-new office furniture that a local business had bought and donated us, because when they moved, it didn't fit. So they just gave it to us, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
But so we do have some new things there, too. But we do have some beautiful antiques right now. We get a lot of things donated when, let's say, a couple's trying to clean out grandma's house. Unfortunately, she just passed, and there's a house full of stuff that doesn't work with their home, their decor. But it was beautiful 50 years ago, and it's beautiful antiques, and there's a lot of folks looking for that. So they'll call us, and we actually will come and pick up donations, although it's great if they'll drop them off for us, because we don't have a ton of trucks. But we sell a lot of repurposed things like that. We get a fair amount from Iowa State, from the students, especially in the spring when they're moving out. They can put it on the curb or they can donate it to us, and we'd much prefer it does not go in the landfill. I mean, we like to reuse, recycle, and don't throw that away. If we can repurpose it and sell it, we will.
This is a store that's open to the public?
Yes, but rent really provides a lot of the funding. We have grants and a lot of donations of cash, but it's what we sell through the store that matters the most.
That's the part that helps fund the organization.
Mm-hmm.
But your mission is really to build affordable housing.
Well, exactly.
So talk about that. What kind of houses do you build?
We do kind of the gauntlet. They're not exotic houses. Many of them don't have a garage. We're not necessarily even putting in air conditioning on a new home. But it's got four walls, a roof. It's good condition. They're either renovated older homes that have kind of gone by the wayside. Then again, it may have been donated when someone passes away. We work with the city of Ames and some other cities around the Tri-County area that we serve, and they will oftentimes negotiate with the homeowner that's left a property derelict, and we'll go in after we get control of the property, renovate it, make it livable again, and then provide quality housing for folks who otherwise might be in an apartment, might be in their car. We do not give away homes. That's a common misstep. That we just, oh, here
so
you go, have a house.
Explain.
Well, first of all, anybody who's passed through the application process and is approved, they put in 400, 500 sweat hours of equity into the new home, working on the remodel and the build of it. So,
and who does actually qualify?
Well, there's an application process. Mm-hmm. You have to be able, obviously, to afford to make the payments. It's typically maybe half. It depends of what they would pay on a standard mortgage. But they do have a mortgage, and there's no money down. That's what their sweat equity is for. Mm-hmm. But they're making payments every month to Habitat for Humanity.
And how do you establish need?
There's a process, a review process, and I mean, it varies a little bit, but obviously it has to be someone that has need. It could be a single mom with several kids. We just recently put a couple different people into a duplex or a double duplex, and we renovated it because they were quadriplegic. And for them to find quality housing and make it accessible for them is very, very difficult, particularly in this community. So we renovated it and made everything, I mean, from lowering some counters to building long ramps so that it works for them. And they both were employed. They're both great people, but they couldn't find quality housing and quality life. And affordable housing is probably one of the hardest things for somebody in Ames who maybe they work at the university and money's not as big an issue. So.
But how many houses a year get built in Ames?
It varies by the year. We've built 58 total so far, and we've got two in process right now. Mm-hmm. We could do more if we can improve our funding, which is one of the reasons we're going into the new location. We'll have a store that's probably four times bigger than what we've got now, mm-hmm. and hopefully that will increase our sales and help our visibility because, you know, they don't have to donate furniture. They could donate checks. Mm-hmm. We'll take cars, yeah. homes, anything. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you just build mainly in Ames? Or
we do Story, Hardin, and Hamilton County, and it depends on where we can find a property. Right now we're talking to the city of Ames about a couple properties, and sometimes we can negotiate to have it just donated to us. Other times the city may work through HUD to get funding to buy the home, and then we buy it from them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of paperwork to jump through, and then there's mm-hmm. all the licensing and different restrictions to upgrade a home so it meets current standards. A lot of the homes that we get have been abandoned for a while, and they're mm-hmm. rather derelict, and to bring them back up to code. And not only do we want to pass inspection, but we want to be a quality home where the new homeowner doesn't have to spend thousands of dollars to replace a furnace and a water heater and the pipes, the electricity, all that stuff has to be upgraded. So mm-hmm. It's a good home when they're ready.
Now, does Habitat for Humanity have its own construction expertise, or do you work with a construction company, or where does the actual professional expertise come from?
Well, it's a little bit of all of those. We do have a Chuck, who's our construction supervisor or foreman, and he's got, I'd say, hundreds of years of experience, but he probably hit me. He knows what he's doing. He's got a lot of connections. We work with a ton of volunteers. It may be a fraternity or a group from Iowa State that comes out. We have a lot of local businesses that will adopt a house and put in a lot of sweat equity of their own to help us get it built and painted. You don't have to be a licensed electrician to be able to help with the roofing or paint and things like this. Mm-hmm. We have a number of contractors that we will work with who, I guess, lack of a better thing, will donate some of their time and effort, or they may give us a discounted rate to do the electrician work or the plumbing. Oh. But it's a community effort.
And this all works. It's amazing.
Yeah, and every house is a little different because we have a little different mix of volunteers uh-huh. and local businesses that are either giving of their time, their money, or volunteers to get the job done. So
that's uh-huh. awesome.
Wow. That's an amazing effort.
Oh, it's fun.
Yeah. So why is it fun? What part do you like about it?
Oh, I like all of it. I think the biggest joy is to see the smile on the new family's face when we cut the ribbon and they get the keys and they get to move in. Because, I mean, they've seen it develop because they've been there painting or doing whatever for the entire time that we build mm-hmm. it. And it could
Do they help build
the
house?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then again, they're probably awesome. Not going to do framing and things, or maybe it depends on the family. But mm-hmm. Everybody can paint or, you know, haul trash out to the dumpster. There's something you can do. Mm-hmm. And they love to take that pride and ownership. And when it's actually done and they get to move in and we're helping them with furniture, and I mean, George and Yang donated furniture to a home. Kurt Warner, who a lot of people who follow football, mm-hmm. and was a mm-hmm. Iowa boy or Northern Iowa, excuse me. Mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people do a lot to help our families, and that's really mm-hmm. what it's all about. To mm-hmm. see the look on the family and the kids' faces, and I have my own room.
So, do you have these scenarios like you see on TV, where everybody gathers in front of the house at the end?
Oh, of course,
like a ribbon cutting.
Oh, you bet.
Aw.
Go all out.
Uh-huh. That must be kind of feel good.
That's the best part
yeah,
of the.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We're talking with Tom Lockhart from Habitat for Humanity for Central Iowa.
Of Central Iowa, huh?
Because you reach other counties as well as Story County.
Yes.
This chapter has just moved its headquarters to a larger facility, or you're just in the process
We're in
of
the
doing
process,
it.
Yeah.
And you're going to be on Grand Avenue. Where exactly on Grand?
It's 3504 Grand Avenue, which is just north of Walmart, Bloomington Road.
The old just, Joy Johnson.
Yeah, well, tried into a big white building. You can't miss it. Set back a little bit. Lots of parking, which is kind of new. And we'll have the store moved in hopefully the week after Easter. That's mm-hmm. our goal. We still got more work to do back there because we started at the front and moved our way back with there's still a couple doors we got to put in, some more painting and racking to get in. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a ton of furniture from our annex and our other store to move in, although we've got a ton of stuff up there already because we had nowhere else to go with it. So,
uh-huh. One of the things that Habitat Humanity points out is that the work you do is it's not just good for the people who end up living in that house, but it's good for community. And I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on what exactly that means.
Well, I think wouldn't you just look at the neighbors? Because we typically we're either building on a vacant lot that's been covered with trash because there was nothing there, or it's a home that maybe was a little more derelict or run down, and now it's a nice new clean building. You've got a family or whoever moving in that has a lot of pride in the ownership, and you know they're going to take care of it. The lawn will be mowed, everything will be clean and spruced, and it's better for the neighborhood. It also helps the tax space because now there's taxes being paid on that property. You've got a pride in ownership, which is huge. And when you walk around, you'll find that that suddenly becomes one of the neighborhood houses that everybody kind of comes to. Mm-hmm. You know, they end up there on a Friday evening or a Saturday afternoon. The kids are all playing in the yard at that house because that's just the kind of people who live there, and it's the center of the community. So
mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, and then you've got this large volunteer base that helps build these houses,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And
we couldn't do it without them.
Yeah. And how does it affect them? What happens to people when they're building these houses?
Oh, you should see the transformation. I mean, you get – we've got some people that I should say know what they're doing that maybe do this for a living, and mm-hmm. they volunteer in their time. But we've got a lot of students. I mean, that's almost half the population, so it's good we can get them involved. Mm-hmm. And a lot of retired folks. And they might have been a banker or a real estate guy in the past life, and now they're here and they're not sure that they can be of any help to us. Well, it's surprising how quickly you can teach somebody how to use a hammer properly or
right.
a screwdriver, and anybody can paint and, you know, haul away garbage and bring things in. So you can put any volunteer to work, and once they see that they're making a difference mm-hmm. and that they can do this, and you're working with a lot of other people that are all working from their heart, doing a good thing for a good reason, it's just self-satisfying. And we've had people who have come as part of a business, come and go, helped us on a build. And a lot of their employees had helped because they were directed to, more or less. I mean, not forced to, but
mm-hmm, right.
they've come back to help again on other projects because they enjoyed
they
it so
to.
Much. It's
mm-hmm.
just so satisfying. So
mm-hmm.
it's,
mm-hmm.
and that's the same thing with our store. Other than our store manager, it's all volunteers that work at the store and do pickups and deliveries and everything else. And we've got some groups from Iowa State that help us out there immensely again because, you know, not every 70-year-old retired guy is going to lift sofas around. Not that mm-hmm. most of us couldn't, but you know, it's nice to have some young blood and backs in there too. So
yeah. Well, I can. I think this can be heard in your voice as well as I can see your face that this is something that clearly you love.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to see and to hear. Yeah, you actually are an Iowan who was living in Arizona for a while, right? And you came back?
Yeah, I'm a native. I was born here, went to Ames High in Iowa State.
Mm-hmm. And then and you lived in Phoenix?
Well, I've lived all over, but yeah, for about 15 years I was down in Phoenix and Scottsdale.
Uh-huh. And now you came back to us.
Yeah.
And this is, do you find this is a satisfying way to be back, is working on these houses?
Yeah, I mean, I work with some nonprofits down in Arizona and had a couple businesses of my own. And, you know, it put me in a position where I can afford to work for a nonprofit, if I can say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can now do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Not that I didn't always do what I wanted to do and enjoy it, but I now have the luxury of being able to work full-time in a part-time job, if that makes sense,
mm-hmm.
and feel like I make a difference mm-hmm. in the community and try and give back a little bit because Ames and Iowa have been so good to me and a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So if somebody is interested in finding out more about getting involved or mm-hmm. possibly helping out financially, do you have a website? Or?
Of course.
Okay, tell us.
Well, it's hfhci.org, which is Habitat for Humanity of Central Iowa.org. So hfhci.org. And okay. we also have a Facebook page for Habitat for Humanity of Central Iowa, and also for the Habitat store.
Okay, and tell us again when the grand opening is.
May 19th. It's a Saturday from 9 to 2.
9 to 2.
And we've got some fabulous raffle prizes. People need to come out. We have very, very generous business community here. And I won't go into all the details yet because we're still seeing things flood in, but we've got thousands of dollars in raffle prizes already in hand donated by some of these tremendous, and you can't beat the Ames merchants, I'll tell you. They've been so good to us.
That's great. And that's on Grand Avenue in the old Joy Johnson.
Heartland Baptist
uh-huh. Church. Okay. Thank you so much for coming by today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg. My co-host is Kobe Gaines. Kobe is a student at Iowa State University, and he brings you this story from Iowa State.
Yeah, on Wednesday of this week, Jamie Pollard, who is the ISU Athletic Director, announced that the athletic department will be donating $1 million to the Office of Financial Aid for helping students who need financial assistance to complete their degrees. I went to the ISU Athletic Department, and there I met Tim Day, and he explained to me how this happened. Tim Day is the faculty athletics representative for Iowa State.
This kind of idea actually started almost a couple of years ago that Jamie Pollard, the athletics director, started to ask questions and think about how the athletics department can make a contribution that's really beneficial to students in general on campus. And over a couple of years, Jamie and I talked about this, and then Cody West started to be in these discussions as well. And Cody has been just really great in terms of thinking through ideas that are most substantive and most helpful. Kobe, as you know, the university budget kind of continues to feel like it's getting cut and cut and cut from Des Moines. At the same time, we all can see that athletics seems to be growing and growing and growing in amplitude.
For sure.
And so with that optic, you know, Jamie Pollard really wanted to help students, and there were a few ideas batted around, but what Roberta Johnson said, the director of financial aid, would be just awesome and super helpful is to utilize that money for these degree completion grants. So that is a specific idea. Really came out of Jamie Pollard's idea that he really wanted to help students in general, and Cody West's idea to say, how do I kind of help grease the skids for that?
That was Tim Day at the ISU Athletics Department. Cody West is the president of the ISU Student Body Government, was part of the collaboration that made it possible for the students needing financial aid to benefit from a $1 million donation from the athletic department. He told me why this is important from his perspective.
Jamie Pollard, athletic director at Iowa State, reached out to us, and I reached out to him kind of mutually when I first got into the role last April. He wanted to kind of talk through what our initiatives were for the year, where we wanted to go, what we envisioned, and we had gotten some ideas from other institutions about doing some kind of low profile things when it comes to athletics. We talked about maybe doing like concession discounts for our students at football games, basketball games, things like that. And he kind of stopped me. He said, "Well, just wait a minute. Let's think a little bit bigger." Okay. That's kind of when this idea of providing scholarships for our students started, and then from there we kind of built partnerships all across campus with Faculty Senate, President Winterstein when she first came into the role, and then ended up relying on the advisement of Roberta Johnson and financial aid to really go forward with it.
How long has this process been for you trying to...
Honestly, Jamie was a really big piece of this because we've obviously had a very successful year when it comes to athletics, and athletics has always been one to support the community.
Mm-hmm.
They've always wanted to reach out and help campus however they can, support even their student athletes that are here. They do a great job, and they have an advisory committee of students that is constantly doing things around the Ames community. Internationally, a group went to Haiti last year, so athletics is making a lot of impacts, not only in Ames, but globally. But just in identifying a way, we sit down every spring with the new team and kind of find how athletics can partner with student government. What do you all want to work on for the upcoming year? Jamie has a couple groups. He's got Athletics Council, which is people from all over the institution, you name it, faculty, staff, students, even alumni serve on that.
Wow.
And then he's actually got an Athletic Director Advisory Committee, too, that's composed of just students on campus. So he's always trying to get student input, mm-hmm. seeing how they can better support the student experience.
That was Cody West, president of the ISU, government of the student body. That's exciting to hear what he had to say. And to get more a specific idea of what is actually happening to the money being donated, I spoke with Roberta Johnson, who is the director of the Financial Aid Office.
How this came about actually is that Dr. Tim Day, who is the faculty athletics representative, was working with the athletic department and with Jamie Pollard, who had indicated that they had a desire to try to assist students in some way, shape, or form. He'd also been working with Cody West, who's our student government president, trying to figure out what that might look like and how the athletic department could give back to students at Iowa State University. Because, again, the athletic department generates revenue for the institution, and some of that comes from the students who obviously are supporting our sports teams. So through Tim, we talked through a variety of options that might have broader appeal than just offering discounts at the concession stands. Mm-hmm. And one of the initiatives that we're involved in already at Iowa State University on a temporary grant proposal is a completion grant to try to assist students who are struggling to put together the last little bit so that they can pay their bill, so that they can register for the following semester. Okay. And for some of those students, it's not a lot of money, but $1,000 might as well be $1 million, which means that they may have to sit out a semester until they can work to pay off the remainder of their bill. And they lose momentum academically. Sometimes when they leave to take that job, they may never come back. And we really want our students to be successful and to complete their degrees, because all the research shows that degree completion is really important for students. So I mentioned that to Tim. He took that back to Jamie, and after they discussed it and we had further conversations, really liked that idea as a mechanism to help students advance to degree completion here at Iowa State University. The $1 million is coming over a period of 5 years, so okay. It's not like we're going to have a whole bucket all at one period of time. So what we'll be looking at is, after we have the last bill payment date for each semester, we will be going out and identifying students who still have outstanding balances. Mm-hmm. Our receivables office will undoubtedly be a very close partner with us in this, because they often are visiting with students who are struggling to make their payments. We want to first and foremost make sure that the students have utilized all available financial aid that's available to them. We need to leverage these dollars so we stretch them as far as possible. So if there are other options that students have not yet taken advantage of, we want to make sure that we've done that. We'll do some intensive counseling with these students as well to make sure that what we're providing for this semester is not just a Band-Aid approach, and that they've got funds available to them so that they don't find themselves in this situation for future terms. This is not intended to be a permanent revenue source for a particular student. Mm-hmm. It's not a scholarship. It's a stopgap measure to try to get students over the finish line so that they can walk across that stage and get their diplomas.
Yep, and that was Roberta Johnson, who is the director of the Financial Aid Office. With all three of them, it was just exciting to hear, you know, how important it is to them to get students crossing the stage and be able to get over that hump of that financial need, because, you know, college is expensive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have a tough time getting to that next level. So having the athletic department, who brings in so much revenue and so much success with recent, you know, sports teams, as the football team and gymnastics and et cetera, there's a lot of money to be, you know, distributed within Iowa State. So it was exciting to, you know, hear all three of their kind of ways, because all three of them were the leaders to really, you know, work together and, you know, achieve this goal. So it was very exciting.
In listening to the interviews you did with them, there was a real spirit of collaboration that was expressed by all of them. They all referenced each other.
Yep.
Kobe, you're a student.
Yep.
And you're also somebody who's interested in athletics.
Yes.
They talk about it as something somewhat new.
Mm-hmm.
How does this affect you?
It makes me feel that with the athletic department in general, they have, you know, so many different assets to help this community, not just with the athletes in themselves. They show that it's not just only about the athletes. We care about everyone in their majors and the students in the community of Iowa State. And that's the thing I love about the school, how much they care. Everyone seems family, when all three of them were talking, they all were talking about the other person, how much the other person was doing, not, you know, focusing on themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest thing, is all of them are selfless. And I think that's really what brings up with Iowa State and what brings up this community, is mm-hmm. everyone's just selfless and everyone wants to help the other person.
Well, thank you for that, Kobe, for that story. This is from Iowa State. And speaking of Iowa State, Alex Fafar has joined us from the Ames History Center with a look back at ISU's history with a particular perspective that fits this Women's History Month theme.
Yeah.
So welcome back, Alex. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have another lecture in our annual lecture series. This is going to be Tuesday, March 27th. So next Tuesday at the Ames Public Library at 7 o'clock. And we're going to talk about history. It's about the people. The women of Cranford Apartments. So maybe some people aren't familiar with the Cranford Apartments, just south of the Iowa State campus. The most recognizable icon of it is probably Jeff's Pizza on the main
Jeff's
floor.
Pizza.
Favorite of mine during my school years at Iowa State.
Yes.
So most people are probably familiar with that, but it's got such a wonderful history to it. If you didn't know, that building was actually built for single faculty women back in 1922. And so these women got together and decided they needed a nice place to live near campus that provided them with, you know, a kitchenette and that kind of thing. And so these women got together and put it there. But they also found a woman architect to be able to design the building. So they contacted Alda Wilson, who is an Iowa State graduate from the class of 1894. Actually, she had an older sister that graduated 2 years earlier, also in engineering. And so it's really interesting that these two sisters must have had some great parents that really supported them, I think, that were able to get them to Iowa State and really get into what was really we say it's a man's field today, but in 1894.
Really was.
It really, really was, yeah. Like 99.999%. So these were the first two women to graduate from that field at Iowa State. And really, they're not the earliest in the country to get that degree, but they were the first ones to get this degree that actually practiced after. These women were actually interested in designing and architecture, so they really kept doing that through their career. So it's going to be a really cool thing. So we're going to talk about some of the people that lived in the building. Its most famous resident is probably Ada Hayden.
That's right.
Everyone's familiar with her because of the park. She studied botany at Iowa State and is credited with first female to get her PhD. Curious, have either one of you ever been in the Cranford Apartments?
I have not actually been in the apartments themselves, although I have to admit I often peer through the windows because I'm curious about it. The building was really owned by women as well as being built by them. It was a corporation
mm-hmm.
of women,
yes.
So it was actually a business that was owned by women
mm-hmm.
at
Correct.
The time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
in 1922. What about you? Have you been in them before, Goldie?
No, I've seen them before, but I'm a customer of, you know, the business below.
Yeah.
Jeff's Pizza. Love their lunch, love their late night specials. So I've seen it.
Good, yeah.
Have you been in there?
I've been in there before. I had some friends that lived in there when mm-hmm. I was attending Iowa State. So I'll give you a little layout, at least the one I know in there. They're kind of two little bedroom apartments. One bedroom has a bathroom off the side. And the other one, which I always thought was really weird, had glass doors on it. And so now thinking about it with this being faculty women, it was probably some kind of like a study or a desk room where they could do after hours work, I imagine.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're really older buildings that have been, you know, updated with plumbing and electrical mm-hmm. and all that. So a lot of pipes and stuff going through the ceiling. But it's.
Does it have a nice feeling in the building?
I'll say it's cozy.
It's cozy.
It's cozy.
You can't beat that. You can't beat that.
It's cozy and it's close to campus.
Okay. I hear it has fold down, like the beds that go up into the wall.
Oh, really? I haven't seen one of those. The one I was in did not have that. That'd be cool to know, though. Some Murphy beds.
Murphy beds. The architecture is really a result of the women who built it going to England and studying architecture in England, right?
Yeah, they did tour over there for quite mm-hmm. a while. That was in 1903, 1904. Actually, the two sisters went over there and they went to Greece, France, a lot of places doing some touring before they ended up getting in New York and doing some work.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Alda's got a couple famous projects. One we're really familiar with. When she was a student at Iowa State, she actually helped out with the Marston Water Tower. So she was working under Marston as an assistant on that.
What do you mean she helped out with it?
Well, a lot of those projects were done by mostly the grad students and the
uh-huh.
undergrad students, more so less than Marston actually doing the work. He kind of just oversaw the project.
So she designed it?
She helped with some of the drafting and the drawing, and that kind of is my interpretation.
Huh.
And one of her another famous buildings she worked on, by the time she got to New York, she started help on the Flatiron Building in New York City.
Oh, wow,
and if
really?
You're not familiar with that, it's kind of a triangle-shaped building. and it looks like a flat iron.
Yeah, it's very iconic.
It's very iconic, yeah. Mm-hmm. They, you know, movies for decades mm-hmm. have been showing that as a New York scene. So it's mm-hmm. it's cool. The next time you see that, you can kind of think of the woman from Ames from the 1880s, the 1890s mm-hmm. that helped kind of get that thing going. So it's going to be cool. I'm excited to learn more about what other women she's figured out that have learned there. I don't know as much besides Ada Hayden myself. So it's going to be a fun program. And that's going to be put on by Marilyn Gibbs Alger. I'm sorry if I pronounced your last name wrong, Marilyn. Her and her brother Monty Gibbs have owned the building for decades, I believe. And that's of Gibbs Plumbing, Monty is. So mm-hmm. we're excited to hear what they found. And they were that one building that kind of held out there on that block that got replaced by CVS Pharmacy and all those little things.
The Kingland Building.
The Kingland yeah. Building, what we call the Champlin Block. And that was the first block that really – that was the business district, that block right there mm-hmm. for decades yeah. in Campus Town with the theaters and stuff. And that's kind of the place where it all got started down there.
So yeah, I remember when the news came out that the rest of the block would be torn down for the Kingland Building to be built. There was a lot of anxiety about whether the Cranford Building – was going to, you know, survive that, and whether Jeff's Pizza would survive
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone that loves their Jeff's Pizza can't miss that.
But it is actually kind of an iconic building in Campus Town,
mm-hmm.
and it is actually a, you know, an architectural example of a certain era.
Definitely. And a great story with all the women involved getting this going kind of under their own steam. It's amazing.
Yeah, I spoke with Marilyn a few years ago mm-hmm. and she told me that she really feels that the spirit of these women are, you know, with her on this project mm-hmm. and have really, you know, wanted her to pursue the history and the understanding of what this building really is. So for her, it's not just a piece of real estate. You know, on a rental real estate, it's really a passion of hers.
Yeah, that's great. Well,
she loves this building.
Yeah, hopefully yeah. it'll be here for many, many years to come.
Yeah.
A great landmark there.
So thank you, Alex. Any other news from the History Center while you're here?
Yeah, I'll give you a reminder about the date for that Cranford Apartment again lecture. It's going to be on Tuesday, March 27th at 7 o'clock at the Ames Public Library Auditorium. We also have another opportunity coming up in early April. If you've ever wanted to be a city historian and do some research, here's your time. We are working with the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. They're doing a project called History Unfolded. And basically what goes on is you'll come in. We have some laptops set up. We'll train you how to do this. And we're going to, like, look at specific days and specific events that happened related to the Holocaust. So maybe a speech that happened or the discovery of a camp. And we're going to look at local newspapers that are digitized here in Iowa and surrounding areas, Des Moines, Ames, Marshalltown, and see what kind of information we can find that is being reported in our local area about this national project. So this is something that's going on all across the country. People in different corners of the United States are looking for these same events and seeing how they're reported. And it's a huge project that the Holocaust Museum is doing to kind of get an idea of what information was making it to the middle of America, Iowa, about the Holocaust, or to Washington State, or up to Maryland. So it's going to be a really cool project. So if you want to get involved with that, that'll be on April 9th. That's a Monday at 6:30 at the Ames Public Library again. And it's a couple weeks away. So you can always check our website at ameshistory.org, and we're going to keep it on our event calendar. And hopefully we'll get a few people out there, and we'll find some articles. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Alex. It's good to have you back, and we'll see you next month.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and you've been listening to Local Talk on...
I've been your host, Kobe Gaines, together with Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, we heard from Tom Larkhart, Public Relations Representative for Habitat for Humanity, Tim Day from the ISU Athletic Department, Cody West, who's the President of the Student Government, and Roberta Johnson from ISU's Financial Aid Department. And also, Dennis Hart brought us local news from the past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related local news.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Also, remember, you can hear it streamed live on khoifm.org. And also on our homepage at khoifm.org, you'll find a recording of this show and other past Local Talk shows with links to the guests and information you heard during the programming. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. So come in and join the Local Talk team. Remember, You, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by the Iowa State Center, presenting Shattered Glass. A 16-member orchestra based in New York City performs without a conductor, Friday, April 6th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.